AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome to True Crime Sleep Stories. This podcast explores the haunting mysteries of the past, weaving real events into tales that captivate while guiding you toward restful sleep. Each episode is grounded in history, blending intrigue and quiet suspense to keep you engaged until your eyes grow heavy. Before we begin, if you love the show, please leave us a 5-star review and consider supporting us on Patreon for just $5 a month. Your support helps keep the show running, and you'll get access to some exclusive content as a thank you. Tonight, we journey to the early 1900s, an era when railroads wove America's countryside together, connecting bustling cities to quiet rural towns. Trains carried goods, news, and travelers, including drifters who moved unseen through the shadows. Men with no fixed homes hopped freight cars, vanishing as quickly as they appeared. In isolated farmhouses where families slept behind simple doors lit by kerosene lamps, a chilling pattern emerged. Entire households were taken in their sleep by an axe-wielding intruder who struck without warning. These weren't crimes of greed or vengeance. Valuables remained untouched. The killer often stayed behind, eating from the family's kitchen and covering every mirror and window with fabric, curtains, dresses, or quilts. It was as if he sought to hide from something, perhaps his own reflection or the world outside. Locals whispered of the man from the train, a phantom who struck near railroad tracks and slipped away with the next whistle. Were these tragedies unrelated or the work of a single, elusive figure? As we trace this mystery, let the eerie calm settle over you like mist across the rails.
Do you know your net worth? Or can you even list all your financial accounts? Believe it or not, most people can't. The problem is simple. When you don't track your finances, you leave hard-earned money on the table by overspending and undersaving. Monarch is the solution, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, you can link all your accounts to see a clear, complete picture of your financial health. With data visualizations and AI-driven insights, Monarch helps you spot patterns, cut wasteful spending, and make better financial decisions without ever touching a spreadsheet. Monarch more than pays for itself. In fact, users save over $200 a month on average. That's why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch the best budgeting app of 2025. Get 50% off your first year when you use code GOALS at monarch.com. That's monarch.com, promo code GOALS. Monarch. The modern way to manage money.
Railroads in the early 1900s transformed rural America, linking urban hubs to small hamlets where life followed the rhythm of harvests and church gatherings. This connectivity brought progress, but also anonymity. Wanderers with no ties could ride the rails and disappear without a trace. During this time, a series of axe murders began to haunt small communities, leaving law enforcement puzzled and residents fearful. Families were taken in their sleep, often with tools from their own sheds. The attacks were swift and silent, ensuring no cries broke the night. The killer's habits were peculiar. He rummaged through belongings but left money behind, ate meals in the darkened homes, and draped fabric over every mirror and window. True crime enthusiasts still debate this ritual. In the folklore of the era, mirrors were seen as portals to the spirit world, often covered after a death to let souls pass freely. This killer, however, covered them before his axe, as if preparing a sacred space. Perhaps he couldn't face his reflection, or maybe he feared supernatural judgment. Some believe it was practical, blocking the view of curious neighbors. Psychologists suggest it was a way to distance himself from his actions, a ritual to compartmentalize the horror. Whatever the reason, these shrouded mirrors turned each home into a sealed, eerie sanctuary, deepening the tragedy's lasting impact. Our story begins in the cold December of 1904 in the pine forests of Trenton, South Carolina. Benjamin Hughes, a dedicated farmer in his 40s, tended a modest plot of cotton and corn with his wife, Eva, who kept their home warm and welcoming. Their daughters, 10-year-old Emma and 6-year-old Hattie, filled the cabin with life. Emma helping with chores, Hattie playing with homemade dolls in the yard. Their home was simple, with wooden walls, a stone fireplace, and a few cozy rooms. It stood on Trenton's outskirts, near enough to hear the Augusta and Florida Railroad's engines chugging past at dusk. On December 17th, the air was crisp with frost, the grass sparkling under moonlight. After a hearty supper of stew and cornbread, the family retired early, as farm life required. Emma and Hattie whispered bedtime stories under their quilts, while Benjamin and Eva settled into their bed, the last lamp flickering out. In rural Trenton, doors stayed unlocked. Neighbors trusted one another. The intruder likely stepped off a freight train a mile away, moving silently through the frosty fields. He slipped through the back door and found the family's axe in the lean-to shed, its handle worn from chopping firewood. Moving upstairs, he struck quickly, taking Benjamin, Eva, and the girls in their sleep with devastating precision. The family was lost in moments, their lives extinguished without a sound. Disturbing whispers from later reports suggested the killer lingered in ways that added to the town's grief, though we honor the victims by focusing on their memory, not the details of the crime. The killer didn't flee. He moved through the house with unsettling calm, pulling Eva's Sunday dresses from hooks and draping them over the parlor's only mirror. He covered every window with quilts and aprons, plunging the home into darkness. This act might reflect old Southern beliefs that mirrors could trap spirits, covered to ease the dead's passage. By doing it beforehand, he may have feared his own soul's capture or sought to avoid his reflection's judgment. Alternatively, it could have been a way to ensure privacy, blocking any outside gaze. He rummaged through drawers, scattering papers, but left the family's small savings, a few dollars in a jar, untouched. In a strange moment of normalcy, he sliced bread and cheese from the pantry and ate by the fireplace's fading glow, the silence heavy around him. The next morning, neighbors noticed the Hughes' cows lowing, unmilked, and restless. A friend entered the cabin and discovered the tragedy, alerting the town. The covered mirrors and windows fueled local superstitions, with some whispering of spirits or curses. Investigators from Aiken County searched for clues, but only footprints leading to the tracks were found. A transient was questioned, but released without evidence. The Hughes family was laid to rest in a shared grave, mourned by a shaken community. For months, locals avoided the cabin, reporting uneasy feelings or faint cries on windy nights. Though the site was later demolished, stories persist of shadows moving through the pines and a cold spot near the tracks where soft sobs linger. These tales keep the Hughes' memory alive in Trenton's quiet corners. The shadow moved south, reaching Milton, Florida, on May 26, 1906, in the humid heat of late spring. Reverend Richard Harry Ackerman, a respected Baptist preacher in his 50s, lived with his wife and seven children in a sprawling home surrounded by palmettos and oaks. The house had a wide porch for escaping the heat, with rooms added as the family grew and a garden blooming with vegetables. It sat a half mile from the Pensacola and Atlantic Railroad, where trains hauled lumber through the night. That Saturday, the Ackermans had led a joyful church service, filled with hymns and a potluck of fried chicken and pies. They returned home at sunset, the children, ranging from toddlers to teens, chatting happily. The youngest clutched a rag doll while the reverend read scripture before bed. The air carried the sweet scent of jasmine and the hum of insects. Under a moonless sky, the intruder approached, likely drawn by the home's seclusion. He entered the barn, taking an axe, and slipped inside the house. He moved to the master bedroom where the reverend and his wife slept, striking them silently. The children, spread across their rooms, were taken just as quickly. Their lives ended in moments of quiet horror. The family's warmth was stilled, leaving only silence. The killer stayed, gathering bed sheets from the linen closet to cover every window, pinning them tightly. He draped a child's Sunday dress over the hallway's ornate mirror, its hem brushing the floor. This ritual might tie to the reverend's faith, perhaps a twisted mimicry of mourning practices to trap spirits or avoid divine eyes. In some beliefs, mirrors were portals to the afterlife, and covering them ensured the dead remained contained. He then cooked eggs in a skillet, eating slowly in the silent kitchen, leaving the reverend's watch and church funds untouched. A neighbor knocked on Sunday morning, worried by the family's absence from church. The open door revealed the loss, devastating Milton's tight-knit community. A tall stranger with a foreign accent had been seen at the depot, asking about the Ackermans, but he was gone. The family was buried in the churchyard, mourned by hundreds. Though the house was reclaimed by the swamp, locals share tales of apparitions near the old church. A shadowy figure moving in the moonlight, children's laughter turning to cries on humid nights, and cold drafts whispering prayers in empty spaces. On August 7, 1906, the horror reached Monroe County, North Carolina. Wilhelm Lyerly, a sturdy tobacco farmer, lived with his wife, Augusta, and their six children in a two-story farmhouse surrounded by fields. The Norfolk Southern tracks ran nearby, their rumble a familiar sound. After a long day harvesting tobacco, the family shared a meal of ham and greens and retired early, windows open to catch the summer breeze. The killer entered through the cellar, taking an axe from the tool room. he struck Wilhelm and Augusta first, then the children in their lofts, each life taken swiftly. He then poured kerosene from the pantry, lighting a match to set the house ablaze. Flames consumed the home, but first he covered mirrors with tablecloths and sealed windows, locking in the tragedy. The fire might have been to destroy evidence, but the coverings suggest a ritual, perhaps tying fire to cleansing while blocking spiritual escape. The family was lost to the flames. Neighbors spotted the blaze and tried to fight it, but only remains were recovered. Footprints led to the tracks, a vagrant's hat left behind. The Lyerleys were mourned in a mass funeral, the community reeling. The site was rebuilt, but stories persist of fiery shapes in the fields, screams mingling with train horns, and sudden smells of smoke on still days. Years of uneasy quiet followed until June 6, 1912, in Miami County, Kansas. Roland Hudson, a farm implement dealer, and his wife, Anna, lived in a cozy bungalow by the Santa Fe tracks. After a supper of fried chicken, they retired as the prairie wind stirred the curtains. The killer entered through an unlocked door, axe in hand. He took Roland and Anna in their sleep. Their lives ended silently. He draped skirts over the bedroom mirror and windows, creating a darkened void, perhaps to hide from watching eyes. He ate bacon, smoked Roland's pipe, and left valuables behind. Neighbors discovered the scene at noon, alerted by a barking dog. The untouched meal and covered mirrors puzzled investigators. The sight, now gone, is said to unsettle livestock, with shadows moving toward the tracks at night. 3 days later, on June 9, 1912, Villisca, Iowa, faced the tragedy. Josiah Moore, a successful businessman, lived with his wife, Sarah, and their children, Herman, Mary Catherine, Arthur Boyd, and Paul, in a white Victorian home near the train depot. They hosted the Stillinger sisters, Lena and Ina, after a church event. After a joyful evening, they slept by 10 p.m. The killer entered the back door, taking Josiah's axe. He struck Josiah and Sarah first, then the children and Stillingers, Lena showing signs of struggle. He covered every window and mirror, Sarah's dress on the parlor glass, children's clothes elsewhere, perhaps fearing his reflection or trapped spirits. He ate, washed, and rested in the attic. A neighbor's knock revealed the loss. Suspects like a senator and a preacher were investigated, but none were convicted. The Villisca house, now a museum, is famously haunted. Footsteps echo, doors slam, toys move, voices whisper, "He killed us." Apparitions show girls in white or shadowy figures. Visitors report dread, cold spots, or unease. The coverings may have trapped spirits, the sudden loss anchoring them. Bill James suggests Paul Muller, a scarred drifter, but evidence is slim. The killings stopped, leaving questions. As rain taps your window, think of those rails. The axe rests, but its echoes linger. Close your eyes and drift into a peaceful slumber, safe from the blade's edge, wrapped in the quiet hush of Halloween's embrace. Sweet dreams, until the next tale awakens.